Thanks for joining us today. I'm Al Loya, and you're listening to
Sounds Around Town.
In this podcast, I'll be speaking with Big Rube of Underground Nation. We will be discussing amplifiers and getting the most bang for your buck. Solid state versus tube. At the end of this podcast, there are examples of what both a tube amp and a solid state amp sound like through their clean channels.
Hey Al, I just wanted to tell you how much I appreciate you inviting me out to come and talk to you and spend some time here in your luxurious studio. Definitely one of the up-and-coming studios here in South Texas, and from what I understand, it's making Austin cringe a little bit because now they know they got some serious competition, which is all good and well.
Well, thanks, Rube, for the compliment. What we're going to talk about today is amplifiers and getting a good sound at a price that you can afford. Hey, Rube, tell us how long you've been playing guitar.
27 years.
Wow, that's a long time.
It sure is. I'm ready for retirement.
All right, Rube. Why don't you give our listeners some tips on what you look for when you're out to buy a new amplifier?
Well, one of the things is right off the top is when you go in looking for an amp and you have an idea of how much money you want to spend, that's going to be predicated a lot by how much latitude you have with what you're looking for. So if you go in with, say, $500, that's going to limit you to a certain tier of equipment that you'll have access to. Of course, more money brings you up the ladder with other types of equipment, each of which does not necessarily mean that that's the right amp for you. In other words, spending $5,000 on an amp built in 1958 doesn't mean that's going to be the amp that you need. You could be very well off spending $499 at Guitar Center on an amp that will serve you well, record well, and be very roadworthy and do just about everything you need to do.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that also. Rube, would you consider money or price a big factor before you actually go out and shop for an amp?
It can be an issue. It depends primarily on the musician and where they're at and their career, if you will. Somebody who's just starting out, I personally would recommend that somewhere in the $499 range would be more than adequate to fulfill, their aspirations to learn, to practice, to get kind of into position. And if once they grow with this amp, it will already be of the capacity to use in a live situation or recording. They won't have to go re-spend money if they got a little cheaper amp for $99.
That's great advice. Would a person playing at home for fun be shopping for the same type of amp as, say, another guy who may be looking to join a band? Would that be an issue or a factor they need to consider in shopping for the latest and greatest amplifier out there on the market?
I think that if you're starting out in a band, people who are, at the very beginning of the learning curve, who are just starting out, learning their instrument, learning to play with other people, learning the whole concept of what it means to be in a band and all of that stuff, a $499 amp, $599 amp is perfect. You don't need a stack costing $3,000 and over, a couple of hundred watts. That's not going to do it. You need something that you can grow with and something that you can learn to master.
Cool. That's sage advice, Rube. Now, do you feel that the type of style that you're going after would require you to purchase a certain style or type of amplifier, say a Fender or a PV or a Vox?
Well, the way I look at it is there are many companies that manufacture many different amps, and some of them are tube, some of them are solid state. I personally think that depending on the reputation of the manufacturer does in fact play a large part in just how well their product will sell, who uses it, if it's used in a live situation by artists and so forth, because people have name recognition. They want to see that their stars are using it so they can try to follow in what they're doing and so forth. But by the same token, some companies get very greedy and they put out stuff that's really not, it should be recalled and put back in some sort of I don't know, some, you know, we made a bad choice here. We shouldn't have done that. And there have been a lot of amps that have come out that were just disasters that didn't sell. People got upset, didn't buy, and they lost a lot of credibility. But mostly when you're going to go into a store, let's say like Guitar Center, for example, these guys just want to sell you something, get you out the door. And if you don't know a lot about amps, you're going to be easy prey for them to convince you that what you thought you were looking for really isn't what you need, and you need something else that may cost you a little bit more because they're more interested in that green stuff that's in your pocket. So you need to really be true to yourself about what it is that you do want to do and stick with that. Just because, you know, this guy is on stage and he's playing something doesn't mean that it's the amp for you now. That doesn't mean in a, you know, little while later, you know, once you move on and you become more skilled and more knowledgeable and you've, you know, gotten some growth in there, that you can evolve into some of those other amplifiers. These days, amps are running a very, very close race with a lot of effects. You can actually get just about any kind of sound of an amp in a little box that costs a whole lot less than you would with the amp. Of course, the amp gives you the power, it gives you the speakers, but that little box, you can walk anywhere, plug in your headphones, plug into a mixing board, and you're competing with some of these mainline manufacturers.
Right, right. Yeah, like the Line 6 Pod or other devices might.
Yeah, Line 6, Boss. Digitech, Boss, yeah.
Yeah, at a lot lower cost and portability as well, if you think about it. And you can actually practice on it at home with a set of headphones. Yeah, it's a very good purchase if you think about it.
But let me quantify what I just said with one important caveat to that, and that is this. I look at this whole Line 6, and I'm not degrading Line 6 and that whole market, because it serves a purpose, mainly in studios and so forth. But if you are a player, you're in a band, you are a part of a unit, and you are out there and you're looking to do great things, this whole issue with the Pod and the Digitech, that whole thing, I kind of look at that like an easy bake oven, you know, that they make for kids and they want to make little cupcakes and things in like 2 minutes and that kind of thing. It's not going to get you anywhere fast. If you're going to, you know, be a guitar player, have an amp and so forth, then you need to get you an amp and find one that works for you, and you need to grow with it, you need to live with it, you need to marry it, and anything else you can think of with it, because that is part of your tools of the trade. You need to know how those speakers are going to resonate, how they're going to work, and you're going to learn about all the cool things along the way as you start to discover ideas about your own creativity.
Well, Ruben, can you give a person an idea of how they should go about purchasing an amp? I mean, would you go into the store and just pick up a guitar off the shelf and start playing? Would that be the same as, you know, having your own guitar?
The first thing I would recommend is that if you do have your own guitar, you take that guitar with you to the music store, preferably right when they open or just before they close, because usually that's when there's the least amount of people. And then you can go and you sit down in front of a series of amps that, you know, you're particularly interested in. You can probably do research on the internet, kind of get a heads up on what they're about and so forth, or maybe print you out a little diagram of their control layout, because it's sometimes difficult when some of these amps can be complicated if they're programmable and so forth, and you're fiddling with buttons and everything, and you're missing out on what's more important. But for the purposes of this conversation, you take a basic amp, let's just say it's a solid state. Take, for example, this Marshall MG250 DFX I have here. It's a two-channel amp, 250 watts, and it's in stereo. And it's got some built-in effects on it, nothing elaborate, but just enough to give you a little bit of extra in your sound. And so when I went and test drove this amp, I sat down in front of a whole bunch of combo Marshalls, and I plugged into it, and the first thing I did was get a feel for how this amp responded. How did it interact with the strings? How did it perform with the speakers? Did it give me some tones I was looking for as I started to adjust the EQ and so forth? But one thing that a lot of folks will tell you is that what you hear in a store is not what you're going to hear when you take this amp home. Being in a store environment, they're kind of constructed acoustically to enhance sound And so when you hear an amp in that environment, and you take this thing home to your house and you're in your bedroom and you plug in, it's going to sound a little bit different. But that's where the knobs come in to play. A lot of guys, a lot of girls plug into an amp, put it on 10, and go, and never look back. And when you work with an amp, it's a responsive unit. Those knobs are more than just aesthetic. You need to learn how to use them to get good tone, to learn to develop, to make good adjustments when you're in different rooms, and therefore start to help you craft your sound as you evolve as a player.
Right. And so would you suggest keeping a notebook of some kind in order for you to remember these things that you've learned?
That's exactly right. Most professional players do, in fact, keep notebooks of settings, and when they play different places, different venues, they want to be able to remember what setup they had, what the EQ settings were, if they were playing at, you know, this particular hotel or this club or what have you. Helps them set up more quickly, helps them get through sound check if they need to make adjustments, because live room conditions, of course, do affect sound. The amount of people in the room will, of course, have some absorption and stuff, and you may tend to lose some of your highs, and the adjustments can be made. But the notebook is absolutely key. It's a building block. Over time, you will begin to learn, you know, these features of the amp, that they'll be in the, you know, in the back of your mind, and you'll know very quickly if you need a bit more of this or a little bit less of that.
Right. So it's basically a good idea for you just to keep track of what it is you've done, when it sounded good, when it sounded bad, etc., so that you can evolve as a player and learn that amplifier well then.
Yeah. One of the things I wanted to mention also, in that when you're looking for an amp, ultimately what sounds good to you is what you're going to be happy with and what you're going to live with. I've known a lot of players who've gone in, fell in love with an amp. The first 10 minutes they played it, it was the best thing that since the amps came out and all this kind of stuff. But after a day or two, they come back and says, this isn't the amp I heard in the store. This is not, something's happened, something's changed. And somehow the amp has transformed overnight into something that was not what the player originally wanted. But that has a lot to do, of course, with taking the time to really get comfortable with the amp. You may go into a store 5, 6, 7 times before you finally say, this is the one. This is the one that feels the best. It sounds the greatest. And I think this is the one that I can work with, because it's going to be a tool you're going to use to help you create your sound. And I wanted to mention something also that's important. There's this big myth about tubes and solid state. Over the years, things have changed so much with manufacturing and production that amps today are so advanced, so highly evolved. Even some of the old designs, like the tubes that are running on these newer chassis and boards, that really you could do well with either one. It's going to be predicated, of course, a lot by cost. I prefer, personally, solid-state amps, because those amps are built to a certain high-quality spec, last a long time, extremely roadworthy, as opposed to tubes. And I'm not knocking tubes. Tubes have their purpose, too. But for somebody who's starting out, who's going to grow and be out doing a lot of things, you know, amps are going to get bumped and dropped and so forth, a solid state will wear much better than a high-dollar tube amp. And later on, if you want to get a tube amp, you know, you can go that route, too. But I swear by these. I've used them for many years and used them in recordings, and they work just great. And now with, you know, all these new pedals and things, you know, if you want a particular other sound, you can always go that route and add on to it. But I think solid states offer the most value for people, for folks who are starting out, and, you know, help them get into a band working environment without outlaying a whole lot of cash that could really hurt them, you know, to do other things. And I get that first demo done and paying, you know, other things that go with being a band.
Let's get back to the way the amplifier sounds at the store. Would you suggest that a person shopping for an amp listen for a good basic tone and not get so caught up with the added features? I feel if an amp doesn't sound good on its own, no additional effects are going to improve on its sound. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think that's a very good point there, that you should look at what the amp is about. you know, look at the clean channel, look at the clean side, and see how it's sounding to you, you know, how it's coming across, if the bass sounds pretty robust, if the mid-range is giving you a good sweep across the mids, and if your treble brings up those high ends, and, you know, it sounds really well-rounded, very nice. That's an important important aspect. Before you get into, like, the distortion and start playing with the saturation and things, get the basic clean sound of the amp out, hear it, hear what it's about. Got to get an idea of what this character is, his personality is. It'll talk to you if you listen, really listen to it, and you can hear a whole lot of subtleties in those characteristics, how those speakers will resonate, all that cool stuff.
So, Rube, what do you recommend for that guy or gal that's in the store jamming and is just ready to shell out that cash for that new amp? Should he go with his gut, or should he do some homework or some sort? I mean, this amp's going to define who they are sonically, you know?
I think there are several things that come into play here. One of them is going to be that trying to get a handle on all that excitement that, you know, either in a few hours or in a few days, I'm going to get an amp. That alone can get in the way and cause you to make a bad choice. The other thing is, you know, getting feedback. How has this amp performed? You know, going to Harmony Central online, looking at the amp database, getting an idea of what other people's experiences have been with this amp, reading their reviews, going to the company website, trying to get some audio samples online and see what this thing sounded like through a recording situation. Trying to get some, you know, some basic research on what it is that you're looking for. I always, myself, and keeping up to date with, you know, what new amps are coming out, you know, if there's been some new design changes and things, because all that will have an effect on how an amp will sound. Now, you got to remember, the amp is going to basically amplify what you're about.
Sure.
So it's really kind of partnership here. So whatever you're doing is going to come out on that amplifier and for people to hear.
Yeah.
So you really want something that's going to be a good match for you, you know, a good fit.
Right. And Rube, I've known personally that you've owned some tube amps in the past, and tell us some of the horror stories that you've had owning a tube amp. I mean, I've owned a tube amp myself, and I've had some issues that I've encountered, and it gets kind of costly as far as some of the things that you have to do to maintain that amp.
Well, tube amps, by virtue of what they are essentially that certain something that you just never can quite put your finger on, but you know it's there, that quality. That's what tube amps bring to a situation. It's that little area that's in between the lines that you know it's there, but you don't have to really see it to know it's there, but you recognize it. Tubes are very finicky product. They're high maintenance, and they can be very, very expensive because manufacturing today for tubes market-wise is solely, a lot of it, based on just the, you know, manufacturing for electronics for amplifiers. And they're not quite like what they used to be way back in the day, where a lot of other required tubes.
Radio and television
sets,
et cetera, right?
So an amp nowadays, a good tube amp, usually has what we call match tubes, meaning that they go in there, they match these tubes, they want to make sure that from the same family production, same batch, they go and they test them, and they're both going to have the same signature when they go and they meter them and everything, and they set up the bias and everything. And they'll run together for a good while. But when you deal with tubes, those things can run hot. They can be malfunctions. If you actually bump a chassis because those filaments get hot, they can detach, which means dead tube, which means that amp may not function.
Right.
You can also run the risk of, if that happens, that the amp can blow a fuse. You have to be really careful with tubes because they require a certain procedure for warming up. Let them cook a little bit, and then when they're coming down, you know, the amp has to cool a little bit, let those filaments kind of harden up before you move it. Otherwise, you run the risk again of detaching that filament. So those are some issues that come into that. But when it comes to hearing it, the tube amp sounds really, really nice. It's very, very sweet, robust. It's got its a soul all to its own. Fabulous in recording. Definitely you'd know it, you know, if you've been around amps long enough, if it's a good tube amp or not. And I don't dissuade anybody from going to rod up with a tube amp, other than just be aware it's going to require a little bit more maintenance so that, you know, it can last you a long time. But
give us an idea of what the maintenance for a tube amp, as far as cost, could possibly run a person who's thinking about going with a tube amp.
Well, I think right now a set of four tubes for like a 100-watt brain, it will run you about $100 to $120, depending who the make is, like Ruby tubes, Groove tubes, Svetlana's. Those are all pretty costly tubes. Groove tubes is considered to be one of the more professionally recognized, giving you match sets. They like to sell you in sets, which means they don't like to really sell you by one or two. They want to sell you a set of four if you need to re-tube an amp. Russians make good tubes. Electro-Harmonics makes good tubes. Sometimes you can also mix and match. You don't have to have a complete amp spec'd out just to be one manufacturer. You can have Electro-Harmonics running in the preamp section. They're known professionally as making fantastic preamp tubes for amplifiers. And then you can go with the major power tubes from somebody like Svetlana, for example. They make really rocking tubes. Or, you know, you can go with Philips, they make good tubes. And also, you know, Ruby makes good tubes. Also, JJ Tesla makes some kick-ass tubes. So you'd be doing really good there.
All right, Rube. So, I mean, I know that you've had some situations where a tube pops out of your amplifier, falls to the floor, and breaks.
Yeah.
Okay. That's a bad situation.
Yeah, pretty much.
If you don't have any spares. And it's kind of expensive to have spare tubes. I mean, when they run $60, $80, $100 for a pair of tubes, I mean, that's a lot of money. So those are considerations that you need to take when you're buying an amplifier right off the bat. You need to consider, how much money can I spend for this amplifier, and how much money can I allocate towards repairing that amplifier or keeping it up? So those are all issues that a person needs to take into consideration before they purchase an amplifier. And man, I mean, you've given a lot of great information today, Rube, and we'd hope to have you again on the show and talk about some other things like guitars and things of that nature with the wealth of knowledge that you have. I think that a lot of the folks out there listening could learn a lot. So we appreciate having you out here today, and look forward to seeing you again.
Well, I appreciate that. I look forward to seeing you again.
Here's an example of me playing through a clean tube amp, no reverb, nothing but guitar. This guitar is a Les Paul, and it's being played through a clean tube amp. Now here's an example of me playing the same guitar through a Tech 21. This is solid state amp, and it's the clean channel. No reverb, just guitar. As you heard, both the tube and the solid state amp sound great. So you need to make some decisions on your purchasing based on what you hear and what your pocketbook can afford. I hope that this segment has helped you in some way. And until next time, you're listening to In the Jar Studios, Sounds Around Town.